Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and on the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Soviet Union, we will talk about the hope and promise of a democratic Russia following the collapse of communism and the gradual reversal of reform as Putin has suppressed dissent and stifled press freedom to the extent that Russia has become a KGB-regulated kleptocracy today. First, we are joined in the studio by one of Russia's best-known documentary filmmakers, Marina Golovskaya, who has made an extraordinary film about her best friend, Anna Politkovskaya, the heroic Russian journalist who was mysteriously murdered on Putin's birthday and remains a symbol of freedom in Russia. A freedom that began 20 years ago, but with the murder of Anna Politkovskaya in 2008, began to be slowly and inexorably extinguished, with authoritarian repression continuing today as the Putin regime rolls back freedom and democracy in Russia. Then we look back at the last 20 years of Russia from a different perspective, from another documentary filmmaker, Robin Hessman, whose award-winning film, My Perestroika, traces the lives of young Russian schoolmates who came of age at the end of the Soviet Union and have since tried to adjust to the democratic changes and reversals with varying degrees of success in the new Russia that in many ways is going back to the old. Then finally, we'll be joined by the documentary filmmakers Amanda Pope and Chavdar Georgiou, who made the fascinating documentary The Desert of Forbidden Art, that tells the story of an extraordinary Russian who collected thousands of art treasures forbidden by Stalin and preserved them for posterity in an unlikely museum he built in the deserts of Central Asia.
Joining us now is Marina Golovskaya, who is one of Russia's best-known documentary filmmakers. She has made 35 films, many of which have received top prizes in international film festivals. Marina is now running the documentary program at the UCLA Film School, and her latest film is A Bitter Taste of Freedom, which is premiering at the DocuWeeks Film Festival, which begins today. Thank you for joining us here in the studio, Marina Golovskaya. And we've spoken before, and your latest film, A Bitter Taste of Freedom, is a reincarnation of an earlier work you did, A Taste of Freedom. And I'm astounded at how, of course, you and Anna Politkovskaya were best friends. And it's extraordinary how you have documented so much of this person's life. And of course, it's particularly poignant given that she was murdered and is a martyr for Russian freedom.
Yeah, that's what happened to her.
And still to this day, there's been no...
No, there was no second trial.
Right.
And I don't know anything. I don't think anybody knows officially.
Right. Well, we do know that she's killed on October the 7th, which is Putin's birthday. We do know that the film begins with Putin's very cold and callous statement that she was an insignificant person in terms of Russian politics. And, you know, you can't help feeling that she was somebody who really was challenging state authority in a country that doesn't clearly tolerate that anymore.
She did do what you said. But, you know, she was, her voice was not welcome because she was defending all the people who were persecuted or victims of the war or with some unfairness towards them. And she was, you know, she was like a revolutionary of the 19th, 20th century. She was ready to go immediately to defend the people who were, you know, oppressed, injured, etc., etc.
Well, so, she. It's very clear this was not a role she chose for herself. This was an accidental role. She never thought of herself as a war correspondent. She says in the film, I hated guns and violence. But she was drawn into it because of refugees.
Exactly. Life dragged her into this situation. When I knew her, when I made my first film about her, and when she was a student of the university when I was teaching at the time, she was a housewife. She was a very nice, very wonderful, tender mother who was concerned in the first place with the well-being of her kids. She wanted to give them the best education she imagined them. And, of course, she wanted to go to work because she was a journalist and she was a talented journalist from the very beginning. But she didn't even think that she will become a war correspondent. It was absolutely not her. You know, she was a completely peaceful person. She didn't need war. She hated war. But it happened. It so happened. And you are right. She tells that. And I wanted to preserve every single piece in her, not speeches, but conversations with her, because I never took interviews. I was only filming her in my conversation with her.
Well, that's what's lovely about the film. It's so personal, and of course, it's so poignant, too, because of what happened to her and what an important symbol she is for Russia's flirtation with freedom and her desire to see democracy win over a return to authoritarianism. And it's true. I mean, the conversations in Los Angeles, they're like between two girlfriends. You know, she's just telling you she's all excited about the prize she just got in New York.
You know, actually, this was my main goal when I was making this film and started to think about this film, because I was shooting during all these 20 years in between two films. And I never actually really thought that I'll make a film. I was just enjoying talking to her. And I felt that's interesting from the point of view of the history, you know, how people's thoughts are changing under the circumstances. What they think about life? What do they think where we are going as a country and as a people? And she was a very thinking woman with whom it was always a joy to talk. She had so many different, you know, angles and points of views of her own and other people. So every time I thoroughly enjoyed these conversations, but I didn't think that it will ever become a film. And when she was killed, the very same day, her children called me, her son and daughter, and they said, "Will you make a film?" They knew that I was shooting. And I said, "Of course I will make a film, but I have to wait because I'm just now, I cannot even, you know, pull myself together in order to start working on the film." And actually, I am very happy that I didn't make the film right after her murder, because then it would be again another film about the murder and about who is guilty. And now 5 years have passed, and I cannot say I don't care to know who the killer was, but it's not so significant. The significant thing is that she is not here, not with us, and she is so needed. She is so needed. Her voice was needed because she was a kind of a moral authority. You remember in the film, one of our very important and progressive economists says, when such people as Anna are working and living, they are making some of us angry. But when they are gone, we understand that this was our conscience. So this was what happened with Anna. She was our conscience. And it's difficult to live without her now, because this, you know, the level of moral values is very much down now. It's not only in Russia. I'm afraid it's, you know, it's all over the world. Unfortunately, we are living in a very difficult time. Everywhere, look, wars, 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 everywhere. And in these times of trouble, it's so important to have these moral values strong and unchanging.
Again, I'm joined in the studio by Marina Goldovskaya, who is a filmmaker, a lifelong friend with Anna Politkovskaya, who is the subject of her film. The film is A Bitter Taste of Freedom. It is a really moving portrait of your close friend who was murdered, and she was covering the Second Chechen War. But of course, there's so much more in the film, and in many ways, it's the touchstones of all of the hideous incidents that we remembered, the takeover of the theater by the Chechen suicide rebels, and then later the takeover of the school in Beslan. In both cases, she was, in the first case of the theater, she was called in as a mediator, and you see her there trying to mediate. And then in the second case, she's on her way down to Beslan because the Chechen people trust her, the Chechen authorities trust her, and she's poisoned on the plane. And then you happen to be there when she's in hospital. It's extraordinary how much you've captured of this story.
You know, it was just a miracle how it happened. I was listening to the radio in the evening, and I heard over the radio that she's poisoned and she is in the hospital. So I immediately called her kids, and they told me that she's already in Moscow and told me the address of the hospital where she was. So I jumped into the car and went and found her. You know, she was already much better, feeling better, but she was very sick. And you know what is amazing? That she, after this poison, she was sick. She was continuing to go to Chechnya without food there. She was all the time risking her life. She told me that she was several times arrested there in Chechnya. She was afraid to go, but she went because she knew that it is needed. She had to disguise herself and try to be dressed as a Chechen woman so that she's not stopped. And in the middle of the story, this fragile, very warm and extremely interesting woman.
Well, as much as she's the hero of your film, to my mind, the villain is Vladimir Putin. I mean, that's my interpretation. You didn't mention it in the film, but so much of her mission was the Second Chechen War. After the first bloody Chechen War under Yeltsin, then the Second Chechen War takes place, and it was provoked by the bombing of an apartment building on the outskirts of Moscow that's still mysterious to this day who actually did the bombing. Then you have Putin's statements dismissing her as an insignificant person, the botched rescue attempt at the theater where innocent Russians who were going to the theater, including there's a wonderful interview with the widow who lost her husband and her son,
who happens to be Anna's best friend.
And it's heartbreaking because, you know, the film indicates that Putin was the one who ordered this. We know that the poison gas was a special KGB-developed gas developed in their lab. They didn't bother to provide antidotes, which they could have done because it was a derivative of heroin. You know, that's how you rescue people who have overdosed on heroin. Medically, it was so simple. Why they didn't provide an antidote was because it was a state secret. And the wonderful interview with Gorbachev in it sort of indicates to me the tragedy of what the subtext of this film is, that a democratic Russia was taken over by a kind of malicious bureaucracy that has no heart and no soul.
Well, I hope that history will put everything in order and explain to us what happened, because there are so many dark parts of our history, and there was so much hope in the beginning, and the role of Yeltsin is not clear, and the role of Putin is not clear, and the role of everybody, you know. It is a very difficult country. Our history is actually, it's very interesting for the filmmaker to analyze this history. Unfortunately, it's possible to do only many years after. You know, my first film was about prison camps. I made it in 1986. It was the first Soviet film about prison camps. So it was amazing to work on that, and how much I learned about our history after graduating the institute, getting a PhD degree, and I thought I knew everything. No, no way. Mm-hmm. I learned so much. So we will learn a lot. It will be too late. But we'll learn. Yeah.
Well, it's just that we've had so many of these incidents that it's difficult not to connect the dots to the callous disregard for human life and killing the Chechens who took the theater, but not caring about Russian citizens, not providing the antidote because it was a state secret developed in the KGB lab, probably the poison that was administered to Anna on the plane going down to Beslan was another, came from the same laboratory, probably the polonium that killed the KGB guy in London came from the same lab. I just keep feeling that I keep seeing Putin's hand in all of this, and now he's going to run again to be president. He's a perpetual figure in Russia, and I know this is my theory, not yours.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm reluctant to give to make my judgments, because I know not enough, and I absolutely am not connected with the part of the of our bureaucracy who is handling all kinds of stuff. I try not to deal with these people because I'm from another kind of breed of.
Right.
So I don't know what to tell you. I'm not ready to tell you anything.
Well, you tell us enough with your film. I'm reading more into it that you may not agree with, but the interview with Gorbachev is extremely revealing. Gorbachev has been interviewed by The Guardian in London and saying he was sorry that he didn't quit the Communist Party earlier. But he more or less says the same thing in your film.
Yeah. Don't you think that he was extremely sincere in my film?
I did. And, of course, he's probably keeping Novaya Gazeta alive, isn't he, Gorbachev? He's one of the owners, isn't he?
Yes.
And that's probably why Putin hasn't shut it down. I mean, it's the last piece of free press left in Russia, isn't it, along with Echo?
Echo of Moscow. Yeah. Gorbachev is supporting very much the newspaper where Anna was working.
That's what I mean, yeah. 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 I think that's why it still exists.
Yeah, yeah. They're supporting it. No, but I think that Putin also needs some liberal newspapers.
Well, to pretend that it's still a democracy.
To pretend that it's still a democracy and to learn something about his country. I think it's also important. Got a nightlife off his day job. Pushing paper, swinging pendulums. Anything to serve a function or to occupy some time. You gotta earn this living somehow. You're good as dead without a bank account. But it's funny how a lot you fell down in that unemployment line with all that.
Again, I'm joined in the studio by Marina Goldovskaya. Her latest film about her friend Anna Politkovskaya, the courageous Russian journalist, is A Bitter Taste of Freedom. And as I say, it's so poignant, and there's so many tragic ironies in this story, not the least of which is that Anna had just fallen in love. I guess she went to Norway and met some guy. Is that what happened?
She was in Norway, and she fell in love there. And, at first she was very seriously considering to stop her journalist activity and start a new life.
Well, early in the film, it's all about her married life, where her priority is her children and her home. And her first husband was a sort of celebrity, wasn't a journalist?
Yeah, he was.
A celebrity, and he drank not uncommon in Russia.
So she did think about it seriously, but then, she just couldn't leave. She was so captured by her profession and caught up in these circumstances. And then we had a conversation, and they said, why don't you stop? It's very dangerous. I told her, what are you doing? She came from Chechnya, and it was a terrible battle there, and she went right into the middle to find out certain things, investigate. And I said, it's so dangerous. Why do you need it? Maybe it's enough. Maybe it's enough, I said. And she said, I know it's enough. But how can I do that? People expect me to go. They want me to do it. If not me, then who?
Well, also, in the film, you see she gets letters from people all over Russia saying there's this injustice being done to me, the police are harassing me or whatever. And she becomes the kind of person they go to.
She becomes a human rights activist. And this sometimes happens to journalists, but they try to avoid it, as her colleagues told me, because journalists know so much about the characters, and the characters trust them, and they ask to help. And some people just cannot spend their time helping because they have their own work to do, the journalists, to be journalists. Anna never said no. And, this was also, for me, quite a revelation. Already when she died, when she was killed, her friend from Chechnya told me a story which absolutely, knocked me out. She said that once she came to the airport, Anna was leaving for Moscow, and suddenly she said, wait a second, I have to wait a little bit. Now a boy from Chechnya, Chechen boy, will be brought. And the boy was brought by his mother. He didn't have two arms. He lost two arms in an explosion, and he was blind. And this Chechen woman said, what will you be doing with him? how can you take him to Moscow? And she said, he will stay a couple of days with my kids. They will take care of him. And then I will send him to United States. I found a hospital which was willing to take him and cure him.
Well, what's interesting, though, is that you interview her journalistic colleagues, mm-hmm. some of whom admire her,
yeah.
and others who don't, because they think she's too emotional, right. that she's not objective enough.
Right.
And, of course, that's often objectivity is an excuse for journalistic cowardice.
Right. Actually, this was the most important motive that I had making the film. When I understood that not all her colleagues were very happy with what she was doing, I asked one of my colleagues on television, he was working as a war photographer. I said, do you happen to have a couple of photos of Anna in Chechnya? And he said to me, no way, I would never make photos of her. I said, why? Because she's not a journalist, she's all the time crying about things which are happening. She's not a correspondent, she's just too soft. And then I thought, how could he do it? How could he underestimate what she was doing? And I think that it was her very strong side, which was so rare. She became a civil rights activist.
Sure. But also, you have to put it in the other context, Marina, and that is that she's with the only free, objective, honest newspaper left. The rest of the journalists are already sold out to Putin and the state media. So,
yeah,
that's, I think, inescapable. Again, I'm joined in the studio by Marina Golovskaya. Her latest film is a extensive film biography about Anna Politkovskaya, the human rights activist and journalist whose murder in Russia still remains a mystery. The film, A Bitter Taste of Freedom. So will this film be seen in Russia?
Yes. I also asked myself this question and I couldn't answer it. But yesterday I got an invitation from a film festival. It will start on the 2nd of December, 2011. And it will be shown 5 times. It will be the festival will be opening with this film. And then after that, it will be screened in theaters, theatrical distribution in Russia. So I'm very excited. I'm going there.
And when did you film the sequence of the democratic demonstration?
Oh, it was in 1991.
1991?
February 1991, yes.
Oh, that was amazing that... And, of course, here we are speaking on the 20th anniversary of the collapse of the Soviet Union. Of course, was, the head of the KGB and other reactionaries staged a coup against him. And then people came out in millions. And then there was the moment of the rise of Yeltsin and the counter-coup. It's still, though, to my mind, such an historic irony that the last leader of the Soviet Union was such a great man, Gorbachev. And the first leader of a free Russia was such a flawed man, Boris Yeltsin. I mean, I guess tragedy and Russia go hand in hand. There's always courage and cruelty, promise and despair.
It was, of course, very hard to go from the country we had before Gorbachev to a country we wanted to have later. And Yeltsin, actually, he played for some time a very progressive role. He really brought democracy, but then he couldn't handle it. He couldn't tackle it. And I don't know who would be able to do it. It's such a...
Well, he drank too much. That didn't help. I mean, there's a scene in the film where he's obviously completely drunk. Yeah. He can barely...
You see, his presidency had good years in the beginning and bad years because he was the one who put an end to the first coup d'etat. First putsch in 1991.
20 years ago today.
Yeah. And if not for him, I don't know what would happen.
Right.
Probably the bureaucrats and KGB guys would take over.
Which
the
they've done under
they've
Putin.
They've done it.
Yeah.
And they put the detained Gorbachev then. You remember happened.
Right.
And then came Yeltsin, who was strong enough and who had influence and who was a real leader. And he saved the country from that. But then, as you said now, he was, healthy. And then he drank.
He drank and he
a
brought
a little bit more than needed.
And he brought Putin in as his national security advisor.
Yes, yes, he did it.
And the KGB have come back. And that again, you feel throughout the film this relationship that Anna has with the successor, the FSB, that she's certainly on their radar, if you will. And, I think that the murder was ordered by Kadyrov, the Chechen warlord.
You know, I asked her friends and her lawyer, whom do they think we have to blame? And you know what they said? They said that there were so many people who would want to get rid of her. Military people, some of them. You know this Colonel Budanov,
right,
who was killed not long ago by nobody knows whom. He had all the... He was then, of course, it couldn't be him because he was sitting in prison at the time. But he was the one who raped a Chechen girl and then killed her. Anna was one of the people who tried to bring him to justice. It was not easy, but she did it. So such people as he, of course, mm-hmm. would want to get rid of her. And there were many such people. She knew too much. And she knew too much about our Russian soldiers and military. She knew too much about the Chechen terrorists. And she knew too much about Kadyrov. And she knew too much about the whole corrupt system. And she was trying to investigate. And she was investigating. So there were so many people who are potentially involved in that. Anyway, so that's why I'm cautious.
Right.
Making judgments.
But what is so touching about the film is that all of what you've said is in contrast to this real person who's just a loving mother, a house, somebody that's an accidental hero, somebody that never chose this path. Mm-hmm. And, she is such a reluctant hero. You feel it, and at the end when she's finally in love with somebody else, and you were saying that maybe she would have gotten out of it and retired.
I'm sure she would never retire. She said to me, "I cannot leave. I cannot leave." It would when we were discussing it, she said, "I cannot do it. It would be a shame. I'd never feel good that I chickened out."
Mm-hmm.
You know. And that was she, she wanted... It was to a certain extent, and if you remember our books of the communist era, these were, patriots,
mm-hmm.
people who wanted to give their life for their motherland, And this is how we were all educated. I think that there was something from this education which was still instilled in her. Sometimes I find this...
Well, she did give her life for the motherland.
She did. She did.
For a motherland that could be, that should be, that was once there for a brief period of time.
Yes.
And I guess, just in closing here, do you think it will come back? Do you think her martyrdom... The fact that she remains such a symbol of hope for democracy, it hasn't died,
No, it hasn't died, and I'm sure that, it all goes in waves, especially in Russia. If I lived a long life in Russia, and it was all waves, dark wave, and then quite a bright wave. So I hope that this wave will stop, and there will come another one. That's our history. So, of course, we are all hoping for the best, because to say no, no, no doesn't have to live.
Well, I'm so grateful for your film, Marina, and the fact that you to this extraordinary woman, and were able to film so much, and capture so much. It's extraordinary. Film biographies are thin in terms of their texture, but this is so rich. There's so much of what you've captured. So It's a great piece of work, and I congratulate you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And I've been talking with Marina Goldovskaya, who has joined us here in the studio. She is Russia's best-known documentary filmmaker and has made 35 films. She now runs the documentary program at the UCLA Film School. And her latest film is a film biography of her close friend Anna Politkovskaya, A Bitter Taste of Freedom, premiering at the DocuWeeks Film Festival, which begins today.
Когда придет дождь, тот, что уймет нас, когда уйдет тень над моей землей, я проснусь здесь, пусть я проснусь здесь, в долгой траве, рядом с тобой.